called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me?
Uh-huh.
You really do?
Uh-huh.
Anybody on your watch?
Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet. A prophet.
The goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreamed from karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the Jackson. Nah, I was legends, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, uh-huh. Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest today will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, now he coached and blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them. Never write about me like him. Never make me think of one. Just make me angry. Never make me go underdog. And never talk about who's gonna stop me.
Well,
ain't nobody gonna stop me. Not a heavyweight
in the
world fast enough to stop me.
He's a poet, a prophet.
Hey, hey now. We are back. Again, the Hip Hop Sports Support Podcast. The preseason podcast of the year is back. It is exactly 12 midnight on Memorial Day, Monday, May 25th of 2026. This is the only time I can do these things now, ladies and gentlemen. This is it. You're gonna have to deal with me at midnight. This is the maximum amount of energy you're gonna get. I have a house full of children. I'm trying to keep quiet, okay? I'm running on fumes myself. My son, I had one twin toddler that broke his wrist. I had another twin toddler that had a fever and threw up in my bed and peed in his own bed today. It's been a long day, and yet here I stand, ready to give you the podcast of a lifetime. And why? Because it's the NBA playoffs, baby. This is what we do. We step up in crunch time. We don't rely on hypothetical analytics to determine that we would have won 2 out of 3 podcasts. No, we won all the podcast awards, okay? This is it. This is the best podcast you will listen to, and we thank you for spending time with us. Not your boy, Jay Hicks. I'm not your boy, but I'm Justin Hicks, y'all. Back to host the Hip Hop Sports Support Podcast. You guys know you can get at us on X and on Facebook, of course, and the website, as always, hiphopsportsupport.com. We've been at this for quite a few years, and one of the benefits of doing a podcast for as long as I've done one is, and have a website as long as I've had one, is I get to cite prior takes, historical precedent, things of this nature, to prove to you where it is I'm coming from and why I have the opinions I have. And ultimately, we get to see how things unfold. And more often than not, I'm on to something. You know what I mean? And that's just what it is. Now, I know that sounds arrogant. Maybe I'm just waiting to do a podcast. I wait for things to roll and bounce in my direction, and then I do a podcast. Maybe that's the secret sauce. If it is, you know, you guys are going to have to live with it. No, I'm making that up, of course. But in all seriousness, though, first and foremost, I want to talk a little bit about the NBA playoffs, of course, particularly my Cleveland Cavaliers. We will then segue into a segment on one of my favorite NBA players of all time, one who called it a career earlier in this season but never got his proper send-off on the podcast. We will do that, and we'll spend a little time talking Drizzy Drake and Iceman at the end of the show. But first, let's talk a little bit about these NBA playoffs. We don't even have to talk about the whole playoffs in its entirety. The playoffs have been okay. The Western Conference was not that interesting, to be honest, until this round. People tried to hype up the Lakers and LeBron James and the you know, whatever. Like, that was not that interesting in the grand scheme of things, if we're being real. Minnesota had a nice run, showed a lot of toughness, but they fell short. The ascension of the San Antonio Spurs is something worth noting. Also, the Oklahoma City Thunder looking to defend their championship. And they're going to flop all the way to the finish line. Whether you like it or not, they're going to flop all the way to the finish line. And And I do think Oklahoma City is ultimately going to prevail as champions again. But I'll hopefully remember to touch on that momentarily. I want to talk about the Eastern Conference playoffs. Friend of show, friend of podcast, host of the Orange and Blueprint podcast, Anthony Houston, was in Cleveland, Ohio for the Knicks and Cavaliers Game 3 affair, which took place on Saturday night. And that was an abomination of a performance by my Cleveland Cavaliers. His Knicks played extremely well. And as you can imagine, he was elated to call me, having had a few beverages of a certain kind in his system as he roamed the streets of downtown Cleveland on Saturday night looking to stumble back to his hotel. These are the things you get to do when your team wins in the playoffs. So the victor goes the spoils. I got to shout out my other boy, Joe, who attended a game in Cleveland, who was a Detroit Pistons fan. He came from Detroit, drove all the way to Cleveland, watched the Pistons take out the Cavs in, it must have been game six. Because it was a game that they had won. Detroit won that game, and that was the only game they won in Cleveland. So he was happy for that. And then, of course, he actually mailed me the Beat Detroit shirts. I may or may not be wearing it as we speak. And then, of course, I said, you know, these shirts only have value to me if we, in fact, beat Detroit. And guess what? They did. But a lot has changed in the week's time frame, week or so, that the Cavs beat the Pistons in Game 7. As you guys may recall, in the past, when my Cleveland teams tend to crash and burn, I like to do what's called the autopsy, all right? And it's become a new thing on the podcast. It's become an annual thing on the podcast, because unless my teams win a championship, why they didn't win the championship needs to be dissected. And that is why we're here. There was a weird level of expectation facing this Cavaliers team coming into the year. And that has resulted in some weird conclusions that people have drawn about the team as they are on the precipice of being sent home by the Knicks. They're currently down 3-0. They have a game in about, 18 hours or so. They will likely lose that game. If they win that game, they will get trounced in Madison Square Garden on Wednesday night. And that is what will happen. It's one or the other. You know, either it ends tonight or it ends Wednesday night. There's no in between. There's not going to be a Game 6 in Cleveland, as much as I would love to see it. Because, by the way, aside from Anthony, Knicks fans deserve it. Knicks fans are a bunch of clowns and a bunch of assholes. So they deserve, and I get it, they're excited. They're excited that their squad is doing well. But, you know, the arrogance of Knicks fans is really, really annoying. It's really annoying. Especially when, like, a team like the Cavs, the that plucky upstart franchise from Cleveland, Ohio, has been to 5 finals and won a championship in this century. Meanwhile, the Knicks have not made the finals once this century. The last time they made it was 1999, and that was on a strike year, so that didn't count. Plus, they got mopped by the Spurs and a rookie Tim Duncan, or second-year player Tim Duncan. So, you know, that doesn't really count. They were an 8 seed. They didn't belong there. And before that, it was 1994, and I'm old enough to remember that series and watched it in real time. But now we're going back 32 years, y'all. So Knicks fans need to pipe down a little bit. But I understand the excitement. Okay, I get it. But here we are now. The Cavs facing this, again, weird level of expectation. And it's and to restate, it's leading to a lot of weird commentary around the team. And I get it. Because on one hand, this is a team that everybody says lacks culture. Everybody says lacks toughness. Everybody says lacks identity. These are common tropes, talking points that you hear regarding the Cavs. But to be honest, y'all, they have now gone to the playoffs 4 straight years. They've gotten a little bit better each year. I mean, they started off in the play-in from not making the playoffs for years post-LeBron. They made the play-in, but then got beat up by Trae Young and missed the playoffs because they lost in the play-in. And from there, they found themselves going to the playoffs and getting eliminated by the Knicks in round 1. Then they went to the playoffs again and got eliminated by the Celtics in round 2. Then they went to the playoffs again and got eliminated by the Pacers in round 2. and now here they are this year. So this is a team that's gone to the playoffs 4 straight years. They've been to the second round 3 straight years, and they're one of the last 4 teams standing this year. So on the surface, it's like, okay, that sounds pretty good. It sounds like things are trending in the right direction. It sounds like things are you know, looking up for we've got high hopes. But here's the deal. This is also the team with the highest payroll in National Basketball Association history, and that is not an exaggeration. This is the highest payroll of any team ever in the NBA. The 2026 Cleveland Cavaliers, their payroll is $228.6 million American. That is actually the record by $20 million. They didn't break it by a buck. Not even $1 million. No, they decided to stomp on it by $20 million. If you include luxury tax penalties, their roster and tax bill is just a shade under $400 million. Okay? That is an incomprehensible amount of money to spend on a basketball team, especially one that appeared as lifeless as this one did in Game 3 against the Knicks on Saturday night. Okay? And that is why the opinions on this team are all over the place, but it's becoming more and more negative. You know, like, you can't even celebrate the fact that they got over the hump to get out of the second round, which they couldn't do the first 3 years of the Donovan Mitchell era in Cleveland. They were not able to get out of the second round. In fact, they only made the second round 2 of those 3 years, and of course they got beat the last 2 years. Now, a lot of that had to do with injuries, and I got on the podcast and during the autopsy last year and said injuries had a lot to do with why the Cavs did not advance against Indiana. And it's true, they gave a game away in Game 2, but then also Garland was banged up, Mobley was banged up, DeAndre Hunter was banged up, Donovan Mitchell didn't quite look himself. And so when you factor all those things together, I think Sam Merrill may have missed a game, if I'm not mistaken, in that series. When you factor all that together, it's like, okay, this team was not at full strength. It's going to have an effect, and that should be understood by people. However, this year the team is healthy. This is the healthiest Cavs team I've seen in a long time. This is the healthiest the Cavs have been this year. I mean, they started the year injured. Max Strus missed 60 games. Darius Garland missed so many games, they threw him off the team. Injuries were a major storyline for this team, and yet, here they are now, the picture of health, seemingly, and they're just not looking as good as they ought to look. In the December podcast that I did, I gave a quick word about the Cavaliers. Towards the end of that episode, and I expressed a lot of concerns with Kenny Atkinson, specifically his desire to want to jack up threes regardless of the lineup that's out there. So whether or not the Cavs' best shooters were in the lineup or not, it didn't change the game plan. The game plan was still take 40 threes. That didn't make any sense. There was a lot of poor, and I'm putting it nicely when I say poor, late game execution and out of timeout execution by the Cavs. And to me, that falls squarely on the head coach. I also expressed some concerns about Donovan Mitchell's shot selection. So these were all things that were coming up in the early part of the year. Then, before the mock draft, which was in April, that's a very successful mock draft that I encourage you all to listen to, I talked very little bit at the top of the show. I talked about how I was folding my hand on the Cavaliers winning a championship anytime soon. And that was in reference to a podcast that I recorded the year prior, where I said the Cavaliers will win a title in the next 3 years. Like, it will happen. And I withdrew that take. I mean, so fast. You've never seen faster hands. Roy Jones's hands couldn't have taken this take off the table quicker. And the reason was, they traded for James Harden. Okay? They traded for James Harden. My arch nemesis in the NBA was added to my favorite team. The Cleveland Cavaliers had trouble getting over the hump in the playoffs. And the solution to their problems was to bring in the greatest choke artist of his generation in the playoffs. James Harden's a great player. He's an all-time player. He's listed in the top 75 players of all time. He deserves to be in the top 75 players of all time. In my estimation, he's somewhere between 50 and 75. Okay? And it is mostly due to the fact that his performance in the playoffs has been so abysmal. It's been an affront to everything that anybody who likes basketball should look for from a star player in their playoff performance. I don't understand how he has fans. I really don't. Like, who watches what James Harden produces year after year after year and says, sign me up for that. I want some more. I want to see some more of that. Like, this is a guy that in 2012, when the Thunder went to the finals, he was terrible in the finals. Now, he was great leading up to the finals, but he was trash in the NBA finals that year. And he's been trash in big spots in the playoffs ever since. And that was 13, 14 years ago, and nothing's changed in that time. People can grow out of the playoff jitters thing. That's a real thing. We watched it happen with Kyle Lowry. Remember Kyle Lowry sitting the bench, a little couch potato sitting the bench for the 76ers, a little round guy? He was a great player once upon a time. But he would struggle in the playoffs mightily all the time. And we watched him fight his way out of that in 2019 and became a critical figure in the Raptors championship run. Not as critical as Kevin Durant getting injured, but still a critical figure in the success of that championship team in Toronto. And he had good playoff runs after that. But what we notice is James Harden coming into Cleveland changed a lot of people's expectations of what this team could be. Now, I understand why they got rid of Darius Garland and why they moved off of Garland. And I'm a Garland fan. My son is a Garland fan. It hurt to see him go. But I understand why they did it, because he was not reliable. His toe injury and his injuries in general, I've never seen a player get hit in the face more than Darius Garland. His face was a magnet for open hand slaps and fists and elbows. I've never seen anything like it. He would get hit in the face every single game. It's a fun game. Go on X and type in Garland hit in the face and watch how many results pop up. Just put that in your search engine, Garland hit in the face, and you will be amazed. It happened every game for like two straight years. And that's before you get into the toe injuries, which kind of cost Cleveland last year in the playoffs and screwed up the beginning part of this year. Because he's an all-star level point guard in his prime, but he can't stay on the court. And so, yes, I understood the desire to want to move him because Donovan Mitchell needed help. He needed more consistency around him. He needed another ball handler. He needed another scorer, another facilitator, all those things that Darius can excel at, but he was not healthy enough to do it consistently. And you throw a log on the fire that he was not that great in the playoffs either, Darius. So, yes, I understand why they came to the conclusion, Colby Altman and Mike Gansey and those guys in the front office in Cleveland, I understand why they decided, you know what, I've seen enough of this. Okay? But for the solution to be James Harden, never made a lick of sense. In fact, if your solution to the Darius Garland problem is James Harden, then you have no solution. What we're witnessing right now in the Eastern Conference Finals, It was always going to end this way. And I think some people are a little bit blinded by the fact that, you know, the pro Harden people are like, well, the trade was a good thing. He's better than Darius. He's more available than Darius. And, you know, the Cavaliers made it out of the second round. So they made it further than what we thought they made it to as far as we thought they needed to go to, which was the conference finals. They took another step. So that means the James Harden trade was a success, right? And it's like, no, not really. Why would it be a success? Darius Garland's 10 years younger than James Harden. And a lot of people throughout the course of the regular season were saying things like, Harden is just a better basketball player. And I'm thinking like, No, he's not. What makes him better? Honestly, what makes him better? You could maybe argue he's a better regular season player strictly off the fact that he gets to the free throw line. But that's the only thing that he does at an elite level anymore. And there are plenty of nights in the playoffs where referees traditionally swallow their whistles, as I've talked about on the podcast years ago. And that makes James Harden much less effective. Okay? I've ranted about James Harden on his podcast before. Y'all can go back and find it. When the going gets tough in the playoffs, that guy bails. And he so much of his game is predicated on drawing fouls from the officials that when his game's not on, he's not getting to the free throw line either. And then he's got nothing left. He's got no tricks in his bag. People like to trash Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for what he's doing right now in Oklahoma City, and I get that. But guess what? Shai still shot over 50% from the field this year as a guard. He shot like 55%. It's insane. Like, Shai's still producing. He still produces in the playoffs. He's struggling right now against San Antonio. But generally speaking, Shai has produced quite a bit the last couple of years in the playoffs. Harden never does. And when the going gets tough, the guy folds like fresh laundry. I picked the Knicks to win this series in 7 games because I'm like, the Cavaliers sealed their fate on winning a title this year. There was no way they were ever going to get out of the Eastern Conference. Now, 7 games may sound pretty close, but that's because I don't think the Knicks are so special. I think they're playing really good ball right now for the most part, but they certainly weren't good in game 1 of the series, and they were pretty good in game 2. They were much better in game 3, but, you know, the Knicks have played some pretty weak competition in the playoffs as well. But I'm looking at this James Harden thing, and I'm like, yo, all of the things that the Cavs have sucked at in the playoffs, you can draw a straight line back to James Harden. Not to say that he's necessarily the cause for all those things, but these are all things that he exacerbates, such as turnovers and being sloppy with the ball, being lazy on defense. He exacerbates all the negative qualities of the Cavaliers. They're not playing any defense. They're turning the ball over crazy. They play too much one-on-one. They have no fast break opportunities whatsoever. And they get no easy points as a result of it because they want to play in a half court, which suits Harden's game better. The Cavs are minus 123 in fast break points in the postseason. They're minus 72 in points off turnovers. I can draw a direct line back to Harden for both of those stats. Here are James Harden's averages in the Eastern Conference Finals in the second halves of these games. 6.3 points, 1.7 rebounds, 2 assists. He's shooting 27% from the field. He's shooting 8% from 3 and only 75% from the free throw line, which is low by his standards, with just under 2 turnovers a game. So 2 assists to 2 turnovers in a half, 6 points, under 30% shooting. Like, It's an abomination. It's a disaster. It is a disaster the way that he's performed in these playoffs. And we saw it in the Toronto series. We saw it in the Detroit series. They almost lost the series to Toronto. They almost lost the series to the Pistons. They were so terrible in Detroit the first 2 games. They were the better team than Detroit. They were better than Toronto as well. They had far more talent than both teams. But Harden kept them in it because his defense is so bad. And his turnovers were such an issue, specifically in those first 2 games in Detroit. He's averaging, you know, six, eight turnovers a game. It's just unconscionable what he's doing with the basketball. And he's supposed to be your veteran point guard, your stabilizing force. Bringing him in was a colossal mistake. Okay? I don't care that the Cavs made the conference finals. That does not make this trade a success. And then they're going to double down on it and offer this dude an extension. It's horrible. Now, that's the biggest piece of this Cavaliers autopsy. And as I move along, I'll mention that the piss poor coaching in game 1 by Kenny Atkinson was the worst thing I've ever seen. I don't know. That would be like seeing a homeless person drop their meal down the sewer. Like, they get a sandwich and then they just fumble it away. Like, that would be the equivalent of what that game was because the Cavaliers gave it away. Watching Kenny Atkinson get outcoached by Mike Brown to this degree is wild. Mike Brown, of all people. What's funny is that James Harden's leading the team in minutes. He's playing more minutes even than Donovan Mitchell. you know, in this series, Cleveland's shots stopped falling. The free throws, they started missing free throws now. They haven't made any open jumpers this series, but they've been playing every other game for like a month, and you can attribute that to their schedule, which is their fault because they didn't handle business against Toronto and Detroit, two inferior teams. So then they had to play two seven-game series. Now they're playing a rested Knicks team, and they get what they paid for. I figured that the Knicks would come out rusty in game one, and I thought that the Cavs were going to steal game one. I really did. I really believed it. And they had it stolen. They were up 22 in the fourth quarter until the Knicks decided to go ISO Brunson against Harden every play down the court for like 10 straight minutes. And amazingly, some of the stats out of that game will blow your mind, but you know, amazingly, they were getting points every single time down the court. Brunson was just annihilating James Harden, and the Cavaliers did nothing to stop it. They kept conceding the switch. Dean Wade was on the court for the sole purpose of guarding Jalen Brunson. And yet, every time another Knick player got near Jalen Brunson, the Cavaliers just automatically switched it. And it's like, you don't have to do that. And what's crazy is, if you watch the Knicks, they'll put Josh Hart, who's their best perimeter defender, or one of their better perimeter defenders, on Donovan Mitchell, and they won't switch. Like, they'll try to run a screen, and then Hart, if you know, if it's a legitimate screen, he'll switch. But if they're just two guys standing in the same vicinity, he's not just going to automatically switch that. And that's exactly what the Cavaliers did over and over again in game one, until the lead was gone and Kenny Atkinson didn't call any timeouts. And then his explanation post-game was ridiculous, much like his explanation after every game this series has been ridiculous. And then today he says something like, yeah, we've won the analytical battle 2 out of 3 games or something like that. It's like, this guy doesn't have a clue what the hell he's talking about. And he's about to get fired for sounding like a complete moron on top of his piss poor coaching performance. To me, the Knicks are going to win this series, and like again, it's going to be in pretty short order. And you know, everybody, a lot of people had Knicks in 5. Or, you know, I heard a lot of, it was Knicks in 6 was a pretty safe bet. I heard people saying Knicks in 5. I thought that was absurd because they're not that much better than the Cavs, and I still don't think they are. But they're certainly playing that much better. And when the Cavaliers blew that first game, I mean, all bets were off on as far as what we were going to see after that. This series to me has more to do with the Cavs sucking than the Knicks being great. The Knicks were better in game two than the Cavs, and they were better than they were in game one, but they weren't exceptional in game two. The Knicks were pretty damn good in game three, but the Cavs also sucked ass in game three, and they're not making any shots. They're shooting like below 30% as a team from three in this series, and we know they want to chuck 40 or 50 threes a game. So this is how you end up with the Cavaliers where they are. Not to mention, they stopped playing through their bigs. You know, they're not prioritizing Allen and Mobley. They're getting that short roll option, but they're throwing terrible passes. They're trying to thread the needle on these bounce passes in traffic that get deflected every time. It's like, why are you guys not throwing the ball up to the rim to Allen and Mobley, where they're bigger than the Knicks most of the time? That would make too much sense, but they're not doing it. So they're not playing through their bigs. And Donovan Mitchell, God love him, and I do have a lot of love for Donovan Mitchell. He's a great dude. He's a great dude. And he's a great player. But there's a lot of whispers out there that you can't win a title with him as your best player. And that may be true, if for no other reason that he's not a point guard, but he's the size of a point guard, and he's a shoot-first scoring guard. And those guys typically don't win titles. And I would say the same about Jalen Brunson. But, you know, Donovan just has not been able to put it all together. Every year, he seems to look tired and sluggish in the playoffs, regardless of how many minutes he did or didn't play in the weeks leading up to the playoffs. Like, it doesn't seem to matter. Like, he's always looking exhausted in the playoffs. He looked exhausted last year against the Pacers. He's looking exhausted and worn down again this year. I don't get it. And, you know, if the Cavs are going to have any hope of extending this series, they got to hit some shots. But I'm recording this with under the assumption that they've already lost the series. This is the autopsy. Their season's over. They're not going to the finals. So what are the big questions? Well, again, this team went about as far as I thought they would. And there's this issue with their heart. You know, the way they quit at the end of game three on that last Brunson layup was embarrassing. Does this team have the heart? Maybe. I mean, I don't think it's totally fair to say that they have no heart, because we did see them win two game sevens this year, and they won that game five up in Detroit, which was a big win. So, I mean, I can't say they have no heart, but, I mean, it would help if they had a little bit more, if they had got a little bit meaner, you know, got a little bit smarter in how they coach the game. I mean, I just watching Kenny Atkinson not keep Dean Wade on Jalen Brunson and kept switching it with Harden on Brunson, their worst defender. And people actually tried to argue with me that James Harden was a good defender on X. It's unbelievable. But now you see. You get it now. But to watch Kenny Atkinson do that, it was almost like, you know how like when a baseball game goes into 18 innings and then they let the third baseman pitch? It would be like if you let the third baseman pitch in the bottom of the ninth in a one-run game, and then you go to the bullpen, and out comes the third baseman. You know what I mean? And then the other team's best player gets to bat every single time at the plate. Like, that's what it was like watching that game. I'll never forget how idiotic that all was. But where does the team go from here, right? There's still a bunch of choir boys, but they're talented choir boys. And so maybe you run it back in hopes that things kind of break their way, but things kind of broke their way this year, and they didn't get it done. And adding James Harden to the mix is not the solution. So there's no chance in hell that I'd re-sign him. And at that point, yes, you basically turned your 26-year-old all-star point guard and Darius Garland into a salary dump. But those are the breaks sometimes. It was a bad decision, and that's the result that you have to live with. But doubling down on it by bringing Harden back would just be throwing bad money after a bad problem. And I don't think that that's the way to go. Definitely fire Kenny Atkinson. He can go. Jason Kidd's available. So I would rather have Jason Kidd than Kenny Atkinson. There's a lot of guys that could do better than Kenny Atkinson. Kenny Atkinson has lost the fan base completely. And he got the Coach of the Year kiss of death last year. So we should have all seen this coming. Shout out to Vince Hicks, friend of show. My cousin Vinny has been down on Kenny Atkinson since he unpacked his bags 2 years ago. He's been ready to drive him back to the airport from whence he came and send him back to Long Island on the first thing smoking. But yeah, man, Vince was right. Kenny Atkinson has been terrible. Can you win with Donovan Mitchell as your best player? I don't know. But this is why you don't want to follow Michael Jackson. Donovan Mitchell's the first superstar to don a Cleveland Cavalier uniform since LeBron. And this is what happens. LeBron set the bar so high that he spoiled everybody, and now people want to trash Donovan Mitchell all the time. And it's like, you know, Donovan Mitchell doesn't deserve all the slander that he gets, maybe some, but not all. But I think you have to explore the trade market. You know, don't bring Harden back unless you're going to deal him. But like, you know, who's out there? Is Giannis out there? Can you get Giannis for Jared Allen and something else? Milwaukee's probably going to want Mobley back, and then if that's the case, then I probably wouldn't give up Mobley for Giannis, because there's some speculation that Giannis's knees are shot. But Giannis and Mitchell sounds like an intriguing pair. With Mobley, that sounds really formative. But maybe, you know, Milwaukee probably is not going to take Jared Allen back for Giannis on its own, so maybe then you'd have to do Mobley, and, you know, I don't know. It gets tricky. Milwaukee can probably find a better deal than Jared Allen and some spare change. So, I don't know. And they'd have to do some other stuff to make the contracts match up, and there's a whole second apron thing. Jaylen Brown may be available. Maybe you roll the dice on a Zion Williamson or a Ja Morant. I don't know. I don't know that those guys are great fits. But, you know, if you're going to do something drastic, I would not trade Donovan Mitchell. But yeah, I would move off Harden in a heartbeat, and I would not be opposed to splitting up Allen and Mobley if the price was right. And then there's the whole LeBron question mark. And I personally don't want LeBron back in Cleveland, because I'm tired of LeBron using Cleveland, frankly. He uses Cleveland like he's in a relationship with, you know, it's like an abusive relationship type of deal. You know, when LeBron wanted to leave Cleveland and embarrass the city, he left. Now, he did a lot of great things for the city, don't get me wrong, on the court and off the court, of course. But he did embarrass the city when he left. He comes back. He says it's all about basketball. But really, it was a convenient... Or he says coming to Cleveland is much bigger than basketball. That's what he wrote in the letter. But it was a convenient basketball decision for him to come to Cleveland. And then it was a good PR move for him to come back to Cleveland and to repair his image. And he did a lot of restoration to his image by bringing Cleveland a championship. But then when it no longer served him to be in Cleveland and it served him to be in Los Angeles, suddenly it wasn't bigger than basketball to be in Cleveland anymore. And then he leaves and he goes to L.A. And but even, you know, even going back to the whole, I remember when he was a Jonas Ogauskas was getting his jersey retired and LeBron wanted to be back home for that. And he like stuck in the arena and was like off in the cut. And I'm thinking like, don't take him back for that. Like, you made your choice. You didn't want to be a part of the franchise anymore. And you embarrassed the team and the organization on your way out. So you don't get to come back to Zajunas' retirement night. You blew that opportunity. But now LeBron's left twice. And now he's doing his tampering thing again. He's greasing the skids. He's liking posts on social media about coming back to Cleveland. He knows exactly what the hell he's doing. And he's probably going to end up back in Cleveland. And it would be a great storybook ending. And I'm not a LeBron hater by any stretch. I have a lot of love for LeBron. But I do get aggravated with the way that he, you know, slips on Cleveland like a coat, you know, when it's cold outside. And then when it's summertime, he balls it up and throws it in the basement. Like, it, he just does not seem to value the city or the fans or the fan base in the way that he should. He just uses them. Like, people think it's a one-sided relationship with how Cleveland uses LeBron because he's the greatest player in franchise history. He's got all the records, all the successes due to LeBron. And that's all well and good. But LeBron absolutely has benefited from being in Cleveland throughout the course of his career. And I'll conclude the NBA segment by saying really quickly, I do think the Thunder and Spurs look like they're going seven. The Spurs just routed the Thunder tonight. I think the Thunder will win the series, but I do not think it'll be easy. But I will say this. If the Thunder get back to the finals and face the Knicks, the Thunder will win that series. If the Spurs upset the Thunder, I think the Knicks will actually upset the Spurs and win the NBA championship. And that goes against my belief that you cannot win a title with a shoot first point guard as your number one option. And I understand that there's, you could say that the Warriors did it, but I don't even count the first couple times the Warriors won the title. Their first three, I don't even think fall into that criteria. But I think the last one does, that they won in 22. But even then, they got really lucky with the road that they took to get there. But, you know, that's how it goes when it comes to winning titles. And the Knicks are catching some breaks this year. But I think the bright lights of the finals will finally get to the kids of San Antonio. And being on the Garden stage in the finals, I think, will be too much for those kids in San Antonio to handle. So even though they're more talented than the Knicks are, I don't see them winning that series. I think the Knicks would beat the Spurs, but not the Thunder. So there you go. I do wish y'all that the Cavaliers had brought in a certain player instead of James Harden to help with their situation. Rather than giving away Darius Garland and trading for Harden, I would have rather they kept Garland and tried to find a way to get Chris Paul on their roster. And if anybody's listened to this show or this outlet for some time, you guys know how I feel about CP3, the point guard. I talked about him a little while ago when the Clippers left everyone befuddled with how they handled the situation with Chris and kind of fired him in the middle of the season for no good reason. The people that defended the Clippers in that sound like idiots to me, but you know, Chris got a raw deal there, and I think Chris is one of the most underrated players of all time. He's one of the most underrated players even of his current generation that he's exiting. I think if Chris Paul were on the Cavaliers now, you would not have these issues with turning the ball over. You will not have these issues of the big men not being fed appropriately and the guards shooting the ball too much from three in the perimeter. You would not have these leadership issues. You would not have, you know, at least you might have some of the defensive issues, but at least Chris is smart enough to know how to quarterback a team from the defensive side of the floor. Okay. I think the Cavs would be much better off if they would have had Chris as another guard instead of James Harden, who might get you 20 to 25 points on a given night. But in the playoffs, you know he's going to shrink, he's going to disappear, and then he's going to point the finger and blame other people because that's what he does best. Chris Paul's not like that. He's a foxhole guy. He's a grinder, okay? He puts the work in. He's on his nip hustle grind. You know what I'm saying? This is what I like in basketball players. Guys like Chris, competitive maniacs, okay? Guys that give a damn all the time, not when it's convenient, okay? So the heart stuff, the leadership stuff, the culture stuff, Chris brings all of that to the table. He may not be able to play as much anymore because he's 41 years old, about to be in a couple of days, but or maybe he just turned 41, but like, you know, Harden's 36 and y'all brought him in, and he's not surprisingly, he's flushing the season down the shitter as we speak. But Chris Paul never gave him the proper send-off that he deserved for calling it a career mid-season. My three favorite athletes of my adult life, Charles Barkley, although that was from my childhood life, but that extended into my adult life. I did a podcast on Charles Barkley during the pandemic that explained why I believe he's one of the 10 greatest players of all time. And I make a lot of solid points. I'm just going to put that out there. So go check that out if you haven't. But in addition to that, Tom Brady, when he retired, dropped the podcast on Tom Brady. Talked repeatedly about how I feel he's Russell, Wilt, Jordan, and LeBron all rolled into one on the football field, and that he's the greatest team sport athlete ever in American major professional sports. I've made that case on the podcast before. I gave him his proper send-off. And the last guy is Chris Paul. His retirement marks the end of me being such a fan of an individual. And I started watching Chris Paul. I saw him play at the McDonald's game in person in high school. He and I graduated high school the same year, and I was at the McDonald's game in Cleveland with LeBron James, and Chris Paul was there, and I watched him play as an 18-year-old. He went to Wake Forest. I watched him in college while I was in college, and then after 2 years, he goes in the NBA draft and has one of the great careers of all time, but still finds himself being underrated by a lot of people. Just for the record, you know, and I wanted to give some context on Chris Paul's career to give him the proper adios as he eventually will wind up his way in Springfield for the Hall of Fame. Chris Paul is second all-time in NBA history in assists and steals, right? He's the first player ever with 20,000 points and 10,000 assists. The first player ever to do that, okay? How many guys have done that all-time? Two guys. Chris Paul, LeBron James. That's it, okay? And Chris did it before LeBron did. From an advanced statistical standpoint, few guys ever have an argument that they're a better point guard than Chris Paul. He's 12th all-time in blocks plus minus in NBA history. He's 5th all-time in value over replacement player, or VORP. 5th ever. He's, with a minimum of 800 games, he's 2nd in offensive rating ever in NBA history. 2nd. Only behind Magic Johnson. 4th on that list is Charles Barkley, by the way. From a defensive rating standpoint, among guards, because defensive rating does skew much more to big men, which may be justifiable, but for guards with a minimum of 800 games, Chris Paul is 2nd all-time in defensive rating, only behind Michael Jordan. PER is the same way. Player efficiency rating skews towards big men because it really values rebounding heavily. Chris is 26th all-time in PER, player efficiency rating, but he's 2nd among point guards behind only Magic Johnson. True point guards. Like, I'm not talking guys like Luka Doncic or LeBron, who ran a lot of point but like wasn't like a traditional point guard. Assist to turnover ratio, minimum 800 games, Chris is 2nd all time, only behind Muggsy Bogues. Minimum 800 games is the key there. I would point out that Muggsy played 889 career games. Chris Paul played over 1,300 career games. 1,370 to be exact. So we're talking about a nearly 500 game difference in the regular season. That's how many more games Chris Paul played than Muggsy Bogues, and they both have an assist to turnover ratio of 4 or more. The only other player that's even remotely close in NBA history is John Stockton, who played about 200 games more than Chris Paul, but there's a big difference between 200 and 500 You know what I'm saying? So Paul being at 1370 in games and second in assisted turnover ratio with a minimum of 800 games is pretty spectacular. And that's part of what made him great. His ability to score, his ability to assist, and his ability to defend, his ability to come up in the clutch. Okay. It is my belief that Chris Paul is the greatest pick and roll player ever in the NBA. That is his claim to fame. Pick and roll was definitely something that was done, you know, generations ago. But in the 80s, it was all about the fast break Showtime Lakers and a lot of big dudes posting up on the low block and pounding a rock until they got off a hook shot of some kind. That's what a lot of offense was. Stockton and Malone doing the pick and roll thing really took it to new heights. But John Stockton had the benefit of playing his entire career with Karl Malone. Karl Malone had the benefit of playing pretty much his entire career with John Stockton. Chris Paul never had that. He never had a guy that he could roll with night after night for 20 straight years that was one of the greatest scorers in league history. Like, he never had that, okay? What Chris had was an ability to take DeAndre Jordan and make him an all-NBA center. Okay, the same DeAndre Jordan that Charles Barkley famously said if you locked him overnight in a gym with a basketball and said he couldn't dunk, in the morning he'd have 6 points. Chris Paul got that guy on an all-NBA team. Okay, he made David West a multiple-time all-star. David West is a very fine player, okay? Is he an all-star player? Not really, but Chris got him there, okay? Chris made Tyson Chandler a legitimate lob threat when after he flamed out in Chicago as a high draft pick. He comes to New Orleans with the Hornets, and Chris Paul revitalizes his career. Okay, he's catching lobs all over the place. Right, he was like the precursor to Lob City in LA with DeAndre Jordan. DeAndre Jordan very low on the list of skilled big men, shall we say. A good player in his own right, but scoring the ball in isolation was not DeAndre's strong suit. But he made hundreds of millions of dollars getting fed by Chris Paul. Blake Griffin was another great player. Not an all-time great player, but a very, very good player for a while when he was healthy. Chris got the best out of him. Chris Paul, every team he went to, their record improved. He goes to the Hornets, their record improves. He goes to the Clippers, their record improves. He goes to the Rockets. He goes back to the Thunder, Oklahoma City, and the Thunder, their record improves. And he goes out to Phoenix. You know, he was left for dead in Oklahoma City. He gets traded for Westbrook, who everybody thought was the better player. He turns Oklahoma City into a playoff team. And then he goes to Phoenix a year later, and then nobody thought Phoenix was going to do much of anything, although they had a good run in the bubble. Next thing you know, they're in the finals. After they traded for Chris Paul, he should have won MVP that year. And the same was true, I think, for Golden State when he went there for that year that I hated, and for the year in San Antonio. Every team got better with Chris Paul, okay? Record-wise. I'm not just saying that, like, hypothetically, like, or in theory. That is a testament to his leadership, his desire, his love for the game, his play, who he is as a teammate. You talk about how he was in the clutch. You know, I did an article about the clutch player of the year in the NBA. When they came out with that silly award, I went back and researched it, and I found who should have won the clutch player of the year for the last 10 years before. And from my objective findings between 2012 and 2022, Chris Paul should have won it twice. I had him placing in second place twice. And in third place once. And if you think that I'm crazy, please, I encourage you, read the article. Check out the data that I pulled, and you can see the argument for yourself as to how I came to the conclusions that I came to. But he's one of the most underrated clutch players of his generation. And he's underrated because he didn't have the playoff success to match it. But he does have two playoff game winners in his career. He's got a bunch of buzzer beaters and game winners in his regular season career, but in his postseason career, he does have two game winners. One of them came against Tony Allen, the best perimeter defender of his generation, and the other one was a layup that he made in Game 7 on one leg because he had pulled hamstring over Tim Duncan, and that won a playoff series. So, I mean, the guy was money when it mattered most. There was few guys that you wanted the ball in their hands more than Chris Paul when he had it. So, I mean, you look at the clutch factor, you look at the pick and roll thing, which I think he's the greatest ever. He there was no other point guard that was more of a scoring threat than Chris Paul. CP3 could get you 20, 25, 30 points every night if he chose to. Revitalize the mid-game range, okay? When everybody was shooting threes, he made the mid-range a thing again and took the Suns all the way to the finals doing it and got him two games within the championship primarily through his mid-range jumper, okay? Look at all the games he used to take over in the playoffs for Phoenix. Go look it up. That was him snaking the pick and roll. I don't know if he invented it, but he certainly popularized it, okay? He's the greatest pick and roll player we've ever seen. Stockton was not a threat to score off the pick and roll like Paul is. He could do it, but he ain't the threat that Paul is. That's why Paul's got 20,000 points. Jason Kidd can't score or shoot like Chris Paul. Gary Payton couldn't score or shoot like Chris Paul. Okay? And then all those scores, the guys like the Karl Malones of the world, he's got Stockton dishing the ball always. So none of those finishers on the screen and roll. Amari Stoudemire had a good run, but it wasn't sustained, and he got to play with Steve Nash. But look at all the great big men that Chris Paul made look good. DeAndre Ayton, he's been a laughing stock in the NBA aside from his years playing with Chris Paul. Okay? All these big men, Chris Paul made them look like the best version of themselves. This is his claim to fame as the greatest, the play that's utilized more than any other play in basketball today is the pick and roll. And he ran it better than anybody else. Okay? Defensively, he made the all defensive team 9 times. That's the same number as Michael Jordan. He's a 6-foot guard. A 6-foot guard. I stood next to him before. I'm 6 feet tall. I looked him square in the eye when I met him. He's 6 feet. 6-foot guards typically get picked on all the time. They're usually lousy defenders. Guys that are 6'2 and 6'4 that play point guard, typically not that good defenders. 6'4, maybe you find some good ones. But the guys that are 6'2 and below, typically lousy defenders. Damian Lillard, these guys. Lousy defenders. This is what separates Chris Paul. This is why Chris Paul's a better point guard than Steph Curry. Steph Curry's got the championships, so nobody's going to place Chris Paul ahead of Steph Curry on their pantheon of great NBA players. But I will. Why? Because I watched Steve Kerr pull Steph Curry off the floor in critical moments of games. Plenty of times. The game is hanging in the balance. Golden State got the points they needed, but they needed a stop, and there was a timeout called. So what do? They bench Steph Curry. You will never see Chris Paul get benched in crunch time on offense or defense. You would never see that. But if you're telling me that your team, when you need a stop the most, is better off without Steph Curry on the court, then I know Chris Paul's a better player. Because defense is 50% of the game. You spend half the game on defense. And Chris Paul is one of the great defenders the game has ever seen. So he changed the game with the mid-range. How did he change the game with the mid-range? Look who's running the NBA right now. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 2-time defending MVP, who is on record saying that he owes so much of his success to the year that he played with Chris Paul in Oklahoma City, which was the bubble year. And that, which reminds me of all of the things that have gone against Chris. He's one of the most unlucky players I've ever seen. Not unlucky on like a Derrick Rose or Grant Hill level with the injuries, but he was just healthy enough that the injuries should not have derailed him as much as they did. But they always seem to, okay? I mean, there's a litany of injuries that Chris has dealt with, particularly in the playoffs. 2013, he had a bone bruise. 2015, he had the hamstring strain that I mentioned earlier. He missed two games in the series after they beat the Spurs that year. You know, he had all kinds of injuries in 2021, and they still went to the finals. He played through quadriceps and ankle injuries in the 2022 playoffs. I mean, he was always breaking down at the end of the year. He had a hand injury in the bubble, like all kinds of stuff. Hamstring strain. I'm just literally going through the list of injuries. Like either he or his best offensive weapon or teammate, usually Blake Griffin, would get hurt at the worst possible time. And it crippled, no pun intended, the Clippers and whatever team he played for year after year. I mean, it was a regular occurrence. That's, I think, as big of a reason as any as why he never won a championship. But he does have the record for the most field goals in a playoff game without a miss. That did happen. He was 14 for 14 in a closeout game on the road against the Pelicans. That was a good one. The guy's got some great moments. I mean, he doesn't get the credit that he deserves. He doesn't get viewed as the tenacious winner and competitor that he is because he did not have a championship. He did not have the team success. Go look at his closeout. Go look at his closeout game against the Jazz in the second round in Houston when he scored 41 points to get to the conference finals for the first time. Go look at what he did. Go look at the 2018 season when the Rockets nearly beat the Durant Warriors. Okay, the reason why they were up on Golden State in that series was Chris Paul. His numbers weren't gaudy, but I promise you, if you watch those games, you will see he was the catalyst for turning that series into Houston's favor, and then he got hurt. As far as the moments that he may have come up short in the playoffs, because I hear people constantly talking about that still, whenever he comes up, they talk about how he's not a winner, he's a choke artist. What about the series against the Thunder in 2014? Well, I'll tell you about that series against the Thunder. That series swung on that Game 5 defeat where they lost 105-104. And again, I've said it before on the podcast, I challenge any one of you, go back and watch the end of that game. The foul on the three of Westbrook was a phantom call. He did not touch Russell Westbrook. And then the turnover at the end of the game, he had a horrible turnover in the backcourt, but then the turnover at the end of the game, he had a turnover that was off of Matt Barnes, and you can even hear Steve Kerr, who was a commentator at that point, saying, "Oh, that certainly looks like it's off Matt Barnes." And I believe Matt Barnes is on the Oklahoma City, the point is it was off the Oklahoma City player. I thought it was Matt Barnes. Maybe he was on the Clippers, but the ball went off Oklahoma City. Like, you can clearly see the ball go off Oklahoma City. Steve Kerr says it on the telecast, and nothing. I don't even know if they had replay back then. But ultimately, the call stood and Oklahoma City got the ball back. The last play of the game was a turnover where it looked like Chris Paul got fouled and they did not call it. So it was like only one of those mistakes was a true mistake on Chris's part. And then there was like three horrendous calls that all went against him. And that kind of, you know, screwed things up. But in that series against Oklahoma City, that everybody says that he sucked in, he averaged 22.5 points, 11.8 assists, 2.5 steals a game, only 2 turnovers a game. He shot 51% from the field, 45% from three, and he was amazing. He was amazing. The other series that he gets a lot of grief for was the series that they lost to Houston when he was with the Clippers in 2015 when he was coming off that hamstring injury. He missed the first 2 games of that series. And then they inexplicably blew that game 6, I think, in L.A. when the Rockets had this massive comeback. And all of a sudden, Josh Smith and who was it? Corey. What was his name? The kid that went to Florida. Was it Corey something? Corey Brewer, I think. No, was it Corey Brewer? It was Josh Smith and a bunch of dudes that had no business hitting threes was hitting threes for Houston. And he gets a lot of crap for that. In that series, he averaged 21 points, 10 assists, 4 rebounds, 1.5 steals, 2 turnovers a game. He shot 49% from the floor, 40% from the three, and 91% from the foul line on a bum hamstring in 4 games. You know, like that, 5 games, excuse me. This is when he, quote unquote, came up short. You know what I mean? In those type series. So, like, usually, again, every star player has a bad moment, a bad game, a bad series even. But more often than not, Chris was delivering when it mattered. And you can see it there. if you look at who Chris Paul beat in the playoffs, well, he beat Steph Curry before in the playoffs. He beat LeBron James in the playoffs. He beat Jokic in the playoffs, swept him. He beat Kawhi and Tim Duncan in the playoffs when they were on the same team. He beat Dirk. He beat Anthony Davis. He beat Russell Westbrook. He beat Donovan Mitchell. He beat Jimmy Butler and Paul George. He beat a lot of guys in the playoffs, Chris did. Doesn't get the credit for it. Doesn't get the credit for it. So don't tell me he can't beat anybody in the postseason, because we've seen him do it before. Y'all just choose not to remember it. I'll give you the two times where I felt like Chris could have done a little bit more in the playoffs, and I was disappointed that he came up short. Once was in the bubble. Believe it or not, it was the game seven in the first round series against the Rockets, who had just traded him away, and he was going against James Harden, of all people. Chris had an opportunity to take a long three to win that game, and instead he passed it. And then as the ball got rotated, Harden, of all people, blocked a shot to seal that game. I always will go to my grave thinking that Chris should have taken that long three himself. And then the 2022 series against the Mavericks, not even the finals, because even in the finals, he was solid. He was the best player on Phoenix in the finals. He was definitely better than Devin Booker in the finals. Devin Booker had a poor showing in that series, and I think that cost him. But it wasn't the finals matchup against Milwaukee. It was actually the year after that when they lost to Dallas. I put a lot of that on Chris. He just didn't shoot the ball. He shot the ball well in that series. He just didn't shoot enough. And when everything else fell apart with Phoenix, it was just a disaster after that. Those are the two times where I felt like I needed a little bit more from him. But, I mean, the guy answered the bell so many times. And he was so unfortunate. Again, not just the injuries that I talked about, but stuff like the Laker trade that fell through. He was going to be traded to the Lakers to play with Kobe. And I don't know how good that team would have been, but I'll tell you this. Once Kobe retired, he would have handed the reins to Chris Paul, and that franchise, who historically attracted all the best free agents, would have been sitting there with the best point guard in the NBA. And I think that the Lakers dynasty, or at least their, maybe not their dynasty, but the runway for the Lakers being a successful team would have extended way out with Chris Paul steering the ship. Okay, and then that trade gets rescinded by the NBA in the middle of the night, and next thing you know, he goes to the cursed LA Clippers of all teams. Now he's dealing with the injuries. Now Blake Griffin, his best teammate, is dealing with the injuries. Now he's dealing with Donald Sterling being a racist owner, and that coming down on the Clippers in the midst of a playoff run. He ends up getting traded. Even when he got drafted to the Hornets and in New Orleans, and then Katrina hits and he gets displaced. Now he's playing his rookie season in Oklahoma City. That was unfortunate. Getting drafted by about the cheapest franchise in the NBA was unfortunate. Okay? But yeah, moving on, he goes to Oklahoma City, or he goes to Houston, gets hurt, obviously. He has to get saddled with James Harden. That didn't go great after the Clippers. Then he goes to Oklahoma City for the 1 year, and he elevates the Thunder. All of a sudden, they're shocking everybody. They were the hottest team in the NBA when COVID hits, and they had to shut down the entire season. All that momentum goes out the window. Now, they were ascending to possibly a top three seed. Now, they end up being a five seed, playing the Rockets in the first round, and they got beat barely in game seven. But I'll always wonder what would have been with that Thunder team had that season played out like a normal season. Then he goes to Phoenix. They have a scandal with their owner, and racism was involved yet again, shocker, with Robert Sarver. Like it's always something. Even when he went to San Antonio last year, he finally gets to play in San Antonio with Greg Popovich, an all-time coach that was worthy of having a point guard like Chris Paul, even at his advanced age. And five games into the season, Greg Popovich gets sick, and he's done for the year. And now Mitch Johnson is his coach, some dude named Mitch Johnson. And then Wemby, he gets to have this generational talent that he plays with in Wembanyama. And then Wemby gets hurt and misses a huge chunk of the season. The team trades for De'Aaron Fox. He gets hurt and misses the remainder of the season. And Chris Paul, what did he do? He played all 82 games finally. He played 82 games, but does he get to play a full season with Wemby? Does he get to play a full season with Fox? No. And then what happens? They hit the lottery, and then they draft another point guard in Dylan Harper. Suddenly, Chris Paul's expendable. So now the Spurs don't need Chris Paul. And what happens? The Spurs go all the way to the freaking Western Conference Finals. It's like Chris Paul can't catch a break anywhere. When he was young, he couldn't catch a break. As an old player, he can't catch a break. It's just really frustrating. And that's on top of all the injuries that he dealt with. He's the most unlucky superstar of his era. Dare say, in all my years watching basketball, he may be the most unlucky. That is why he never won a championship. All those reasons. But salute to CP3, the point guard. The greatest point guard I've seen probably since Isaiah. Okay? In Magic. I salute you. We'll miss watching you. My son asked me, Dad, why do you like Chris Paul so much? I said, because he's the same size as me, and I watch him go out every single night in a game of Giants and beat them with his brain. That is why I love Chris Paul. You know what? I'm going to save my Drake takes for another time. We probably have to do a hip-hop only podcast over the summer, but it's getting late here, and we need to wrap this thing up. So I appreciate you guys for listening. So I'll have to put Iceman on ice for a minute, but check out the podcast again in the future. Check out past episodes. I referenced a lot of them, and all the articles that I referenced, it's all out there at hiphopsportsupport.com. Thank y'all for rocking with us once again. NBA Finals is going to be great. Knicks and somebody. I'm thinking Knicks Thunder, and I'm thinking Thunder come out on top. We'll see. Appreciate y'all for listening. Check us out on X and Facebook. Let us know what you think of the show. Am I crazy about CP3? Am I wrong about the Cavaliers? And some of y'all James Harden defenders, y'all had better listen to this episode, because I'm going to be quizzing y'all later on all the nonsense that y'all tried to hand me when you defended this trade when it happened. You know who you are. This is Jay Hicks signing off. We out of here. Peace.